Welcome to The Right You, where we teach you a little Texas law and provide hints for navigating the Texas legal system in the process, all sponsored by The Right Firm. So get ready to start your legal education.
Welcome, this is Patrick Wright, and we're here for another episode of The Right You. I think this is actually episode number 4. And today, in this episode, I have with me Paul Wright. Paul's a partner at the law firm. He's been practicing law for 12 years, and he's a certified public accountant, and he practices in the area of probate and estates with the firm. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing great.
And Paul, I think probably one of the first things that I want to ask you about as far as probate and estate planning that people may want to know is do you really need a will in Texas?
You know, I think the answer to that question is obviously yes. You know, I think if you look at the studies, particularly with the AARP study, is that 66% of Americans have no form of estate planning whatsoever. That is, you know, no form of like either a will or a, you know, statutory durable power of attorney, a medical power of attorney, or any of those form of documents. And clearly, if you want to express your wishes as far as where your property is going to go to or who it's going to pass to upon your death, that you clearly need a last will and testament.
Let me back up here for a second and address probably one thing, which is, you know, I had introduced you and said that you practice in the area of probate and estate planning. Just for our audience, you know, maybe people will know that they need a will or that they need to do some planning upon the death of a loved one. But what really does the field of probate and estate planning encompass? What's that about?
Well, it's a fairly a wide field. You know, it encompasses everything from actual document preparation, where you're actually drafting, you know, a legal document, will. And it also can express taking that will into the court system, you know, vis-a-vis a probate filing. It can also encompass, you know, contested probate, where there might be litigation that picks up over a decedent's estate. And it also encompasses areas such as guardianship. And then, of course, there's another subset, which is elder law, which is also kind of encompasses, there's a little overlap, some of the same areas that estate and probate does.
And so, you know, you see all these things online now where you know, people are selling wills. Is it necessary to go to a lawyer to have a will done?
Well, I think that a lawyer basically going to one for estate planning is really more like insurance. Certainly, I've looked at some of the online packages, and I've looked at some of them that specifically note that it's a Texas-specific will. And frankly, the wills are not. And in Texas, at least, our probate laws governed by the Texas Probate Code are unique to the state, meaning that if you have a will outside of the state of Texas, is that, of course, the state may recognize it, but the requirements are different for that will. So my answer is that, you know, I don't think that, you know, going through and having a lawyer draft the will is that expensive. And certainly if you screw up, that is, if you don't do it right in the process of doing it yourself, you're going to cost yourself a whole lot more money in the probate process.
So have you met with people who have used, you know, an online service to do a will? And have you reviewed those documents?
I have. I have.
And so, and typically, as far as the wills that you, you know, draft with the firm, like if someone just wanted a basic will, what would the cost of something like that be?
You know, that's another interesting question because, I mean, you can basically do really simple wills for, you know, I'm just going to take a shot with the standard package, like $250 or something like that. And that would cover actually meeting with a lawyer, having the documents drafted, and then also executing the documents. And I think that's the one thing, point that I'd like to make, which is that, you know, in Texas at least, it's a little more than just having a legal document drafted, is that the Texas Probate Code says the document has to actually be executed with the formalities of Texas law. And you know, basically that's one of the things that we see a lot where the document, you know, might be a perfectly valid will, but it's deficient in some manner.
And so, you know, what happens if there are people who are listening to this right now What happens if they don't have a will right now? What would happen to them and the that sad instance that maybe they were to die? What would happen if they didn't have a will in place?
Well, I'll tell you that what would happen is if they had, an estate to speak of, that is, if they had, some bank accounts, a house, motor vehicles, just say a typical estate, what's going to happen is that you're going to have to go into court and open up an administration by, filing an application for an administration to give an administrator the authority to handle that estate. And that's the first part. And then you're also going to have to determine who your heirs are. So who under the laws of intestacy, under the state law of Texas, who would actually take your property. So it's a much more costly, much more complicated, and frankly, a much more time-consuming process than just basically having a will.
Isn't if you don't have a will, isn't it really in the state saying how your property is going to be divided?
Well, it's not that the state's going to get your property, which I think that's kind of a misconception. I hear that a lot of people saying if I don't have a will, the state's going to get it. The state's certainly not going to get your property in most instances, but the state is going to, vis-a-vis the Texas Probate Code, is going to determine who gets it. Such that, you may want to favor, a particular child, and the children may take everything equally under the laws of intestate distribution. And so I think that if you have, a particular idea of how you want your property to pass, or frankly, who you want to administer your estate, you need to have a will.
And so, and then, you hear, sometimes you'll hear people will say, I want a living will. Is a living will really a will?
Well, no, a living will is not. A living will also is known as an advance directive. And I hear that term confused a lot. I hear the terms will, and living trust actually confused. A will is a testamentary document that talks about who's going to handle your estate and where your property is going to go. A living will is an advance directive that really speaks to how your care is going to be provided, in your last days. That is, if you have a terminal or an irreversible condition. And then a living trust is nothing more than a trust that is established, really more or less like a revocable management trust. That is, you can amend it, and it's a trust that enables you to manage your property while you're alive and then pass that property upon your death.
So let me ask you this. So God forbid, driving home from this interview and get into a car accident and they take me into the emergency room and they've got me hooked up to all these machines. What you're saying about that living will, is that the document that the doctor's going to look at to determine whether or not they keep me on life support machine or not? Is that what you're saying?
That's really what I'm saying, is that in that document, I think we kind of in the trade call it like a pull-the-plug document. Which there's a couple of ways you can draft them, but the state-mandated form really speaks to two conditions that the physician's going to look at, which is a terminal condition, that is a condition where you're expected to die within 6 months or less without life-sustaining treatment, and then an irreversible condition, which is a condition where you're probably going to die. You're just not going to die within that six-month time frame. But it's a document that really expresses your wishes. And, kind of one things that I've seen is that, it's just good to have them because, in that last, illness situation where you do need someone to make a decision whether life support should be administered or not, if the document's done, the document may never be pulled out at all, but at least because it's been done, the family knows what your wishes are about that decision. And I think that it really helps the family in that situation.
And then, okay, let's say that you have that situation that we talked about, and you get in a car wreck, and you're in the hospital, and maybe you're incapacitated, but you're gonna recover. Any other documents that would help you run your financial affairs while you're incapacitated and in that hospital bed? What would you suggest to people about that?
Well, I think that as part of estate planning, this is one of the things that I think that folks overlook is estate planning. And it sounds like a big, heavy term, but it's really nothing more than providing for the disposition of your property upon your death. And then also providing for disability or incapacity. So the will course that we talked about would deal with disposition of property upon death, but you also have to look at, as you stated, what happens if you become disabled or incapacitated. And estate planners across the state of Texas generally recommend a statutory durable power of attorney to complement your will, also a medical power of attorney, and then, of course, direct to physicians. You know, we also do medical authorizations or HIPAA forms, and then in certain instances, you may also do a declaration of guardian, either for an adult or a minor, and those are kind of the basic documents that you use.
You know, occasionally you hear people talk about that they want to do estate planning, where kind of let the public know. When you're planning, is that just people coming in your office and trying to figure out, you know, what assets they have and what tax planning you might do and how may they structure themselves for the future to be able to plan for the inevitable fact that they may die? Are those the type of things you're talking to them about?
In fact, one of the things that's kind of interesting about that is that I think a lot of clients kind of have the idea that they don't need to engage in planning because they have this idea that, you know, it's something that only Bill Gates engages in. But frankly, you know, you can have, you know, even smaller estates where that, you know, you're going to undertake some planning. What it entails is, you know, sitting down with a licensed Texas attorney, basically figuring out the assets and liabilities of the estate, figuring out really and truly, it goes down to the core of your wish and desire as far as how you want your estate settled upon your death, and then allowing the attorney to craft a legal document that would you know, comply with what your wishes are.
Well, what about those things as far as you know, assets that people might be thinking about that might need to be considered? Things like your 401k and your life insurance, are those things that are handled in probate or are they outside of probate?
Well, it's a really good question. And what we see a lot is that folks will come in and do some planning. And in the planning process, you really have to look at two different asset classifications. You have to look at probate property, and you also have to look at non-probate property. And what I mean by that is that if you have, for instance, life insurance, if it's payable to your estate, it may come in and you know, basically it's estate property, so you may have to deal with that through a formal probate, and it may be subject to the terms of a will. But on the other hand, that same life insurance, if you put a contractually designated beneficiary on the policy, then it's going to pass according to that beneficiary designation, and it's not going to be subject to probate. And that would be the same, you know, with a 403B or with an IRA, or even with a you know, a beneficiary designation on an account. A joint account if there's a joint tenants with right of survivorship designation on it. And so, you know, one of the things that we do within the planning process is you need to identify what type of assets you have and, frankly, if those assets have any beneficiary designations on them, because you want to make sure that they comply with the individual's wishes as far as how property is going to pass according to their will.
I think it's probably safe to say when we're doing this interview, that you're a CPA, so when you're talking about all these things for estate planning, I'm assuming that one of the things that people want to talk to you about is you know, how the tax code affects them upon their death and how it might affect their heirs. Those tax laws change all the time, right?
Right, and I'll tell you this, Patrick, and you know this, is that I started off in public accounting when I was about 19 years old. Certainly not a CPA at 19, but started off in public accounting. And at no other time, I guess in my experience, being 42 now, have we faced such a degree of uncertainty within the estate tax law. Last year, the exemption amount, that is the amount that you could die, you know, with those assets and not paying estate tax, was $3.5 million. Currently, we don't have an estate tax in this country, but the tax is supposed to come back in next year at $1 million. And so, you know, for tax planning, it's certainly something that, you know, that CPAs and that, you know, estate planning attorneys need to look at and address, because if you don't deal with the tax issues, you know, in the documents and stuff, you could be giving up some huge benefits.
But as far as those planning documents, if let's say that the government, you know, they always say I'm here from the government, I'm here to help or something like that. That if they change that tax law and it goes back to $1 million, then there are a lot of people who are going to have to really look and see their planning as far as how that's structured, because the government could be trying to come and collect a lot of taxes from us, couldn't it?
Yeah, and the sad thing about it is that the rate's going to go up to 55% of your taxable estate. If they don't deal with the issue, that is, Congress doesn't deal with the issue in this back half of the year, we're going to have a lot of plans that are going to be revised, a lot of people coming back in. Because if you think about it, how do you calculate that dollar amount? You really calculate it by being essentially everything that's inside of your estate that is the gross value. For instance, if you go out and you buy $1 million life insurance policy, well, that $1 million of value is includable within your taxable estate. Certainly, life insurance is not taxable for income tax purposes, but it is includable for estate tax purposes, such that if you had a house in that $1 million policy, well, after the first of the year, you may have a taxable estate.
So probably a safe answer is that when we're talking about tax law, and even there are people in Congress that aren't even able to read the bills now that they're passing. So it'd probably be something that for a safe bet to say is, if you've got any questions about taxes or how it affects your own personal estate, that maybe some planning that's already been done, that you go see a lawyer, whoever that might be, to take a look at that because of all the potential changes that might be ahead.
Certainly, and I will also add this, that the tax law in the estate area has swung widely. It's changed widely in the last couple of years. And so even if the attorney who drafted your document, say, 3 years ago, did something, basically next year that planning may need to be revised because of the fact that it takes into account certain facts and circumstances and assumptions that no longer exist.
Now, and then occasionally I'll hear people will say, well, we live in a fairly mobile society where people are moving around, and they may say, I had my will done in Arkansas and now I'm in Texas. Is the will still valid?
Well, and the answer to that question is yes, under the full faith and credit clause. The problem with it could be that, again, going back to what I said earlier, is that Texas law is specific. So you may have a will that's valid, but the will may not call for an independent administration, meaning kind of the cheaper alternative in probate that Texas offers. And so you may have to actually create an independent administration. The will may also not be self-proved, so that you have to go and find one of those witnesses. And sometimes if the will was done in Arkansas, or if you're dealing with a military will that's fairly old, you may not be able to find the witness, or it may take a while. And certainly Texas law requires that you have two witnesses that are above the age of 14. And if the will is not self-proved, then you're going to have to find one of those witnesses at least to come in the will to provide testimony at the prove-up hearing.
Well, and let's just say this, just so that, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but and that's the beauty of our interview here, which is sort of let people know in real layman, sort of a basic scheme. If a family member were to die, what's the process that they should be engaged in as far as to care for those needs?
Well, I think the process, at least initially, is you're going to be dealing with the death of a family member, and so within a family you're going to have to deal with issues regarding a funeral and things like that. So what I see most of the time is that it's several weeks before folks actually get into an attorney's office regarding a probate matter. Oftentimes several months, because you're dealing with family grief, and a lot of times people don't want to address that issue. But that's why, under Texas law, at least, you have 4 years from the date of death to probate that will. And even after the four-year mark, if you're not in default for failing to present the will in probate, you still might be able to bring it in. But typically what we see is that folks come in, we always ask that you bring the original will, because we're going to need to file that with the probate clerk. And then basically a death certificate and information relating regarding family history, and then also assets and liabilities of the estate. From the time that the client comes in, we're able to look at that information. We'll generally draft an application to probate the will, and then file it, with the clerk's office. And then from that point, you generally have to wait 10 days before you can actually get in and hold a hearing. And the reason why is that Texas has a statutory 10-day notice period, so we have to wait. And then once we can get into court, generally, and get the will admitted to probate, we can get an order signed and get what are called letters testamentary issued that day, and the executor can then act.
Now, and in addition to, I'm going to change subjects real quick with you, just to go, do you in probate and estate planning, do you also work in the area of guardianship?
Yes, I mean, guardianship is something that that we're starting to see a lot more of, because you're generally dealing with a minor or an adult who's incapacitated. And what we're seeing now, you know, with kind of the baby boomers kind of aging into that phase of life, is that you're dealing with a lot of folks who are either suffering from like a mental illness or like an Alzheimer's situation, or other situations where they are incapacitated and need another person to act on their behalf, or frankly they need to be institutionalized and kept there. And the way you typically do it is by having a guardianship of the person, and you can also split the guardianship into the guardianship of the estate too. So you're dealing with both the physical body of the person, and you're also dealing with the money.
All right, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. And sort of one final question, if someone wanted to come in and talk to you about estate planning or maybe doing a will, what type of documents do you recommend that they bring with them when they come in to see you?
Well, what I really recommend is that, they bring in if they have any existing estate planning documents, that they bring those. If we're dealing with a husband and wife, of course, I'd like both of them to come in and talk to me. And then what we generally do is that we'll have most of our potential clients, basically fill out a questionnaire, which is what we use to kind of assess where they are. And also, I think it's really used as a thinking tool, because it gives them a little idea about the need to think about who might be their executor, the type of assets they have, whether we're going to employ a trust or not, and also if they have minor children, who could be the guardians for those kids.
Paul, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Sure.
And, everyone who's listening, we plan on doing a lot more of these podcasts, both with Paul and myself, to as we say on Right You, provide more information for you so you'll be able to navigate the Texas legal system. We hope this information has been helpful today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to us on the Right You. If you'd like to reach us, you may call us at 972-353-4600 or check us out on the web, therightlawyers.com.